you are comfortable wherever you are. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and today we are going to talk about electromagnetism and electromagnetic pollution, the silent and invisible pollutant, with our guest Sabina De Vita. She's written a book with the same name, and she is the owner slash founder of the De Vita Wellness Institute of Living and Learning, as well as the International Institute of Energy Studies. She's had a private practice for over 22 years and is an eclectic psychotherapist, registered nutritionist, doctor of natural medicine, and specialized kinesiologist. Her doctoral dissertation on cerebral allergies, understanding of body, mind, and spirit, was pioneered work in the field of psychology at the University of Toronto. Her main website is devitawellness.com, and she joins us today to talk about her work and research. So with that, welcome to Red Ice Radio, Sabina. Good to have you with us today, and thank you for coming on the program.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm glad to be here. It's quite an honor.
Thank you. We're very excited to have you. And basically, I'd like to ask you a little bit here in the beginning before we go into some of the main discussion here, electromagnetic pollution. If you can talk a little bit about your background, basically, and also mention when you got involved in the work of electromagnetism and when you got basically interested in this, Sabina.
Oh, I would love to. As you mentioned, my background, of course, is in the area of natural medicine. And probably going back to when I actually experienced a lot of chemical sensitivities, and that's probably back about 28 years ago. And as you can well imagine, there weren't really that many people that were versed in this area or where I could literally acquire or get any information and help for myself. So that led me into doing my own research. I was, at that time, I was teaching in the public school system. I was a guidance counselor, and I also noticed that there was a direct link between nutrition and behavior, meaning that if the children were eating very poorly, there would be more of a hyperness and of course, just difficulties with attending and behavioral problems. So anyway, I just noticed that and just began to do something about it. And that was sort of the beginning of really identifying the connection between the environment, nutrition, and behavior, and of course, mental health just in general. And when I began to experience my own allergies and the environment and actually reacting to many of the different contaminants in my environment, I realized that there was much, much more to it. So that led me to delve into it, and I decided to do it as a doctoral dissertation. So my doctoral actually research is in the area of brain allergies. And as you can well imagine, that just kept opening up doors to, well, what impacts the brain? And that continued, of course, later on in my practice, actually after I had graduated, where I did identify electromagnetic influences, and I began to see this more and more in my practice. So that's sort of a real condensed version of my own beginnings, and of course, with my own experience with allergies. And I'm talking about environmental sensitivities, which is really much broader than just eating, say, potato and having a reaction. We're talking more about things in the environment, you know, pollutants, contaminants, and electromagnetic pollutants.
Absolutely. And that's a huge subject. But maybe you can just tell us a little bit about brain allergies. Define that term for us. It sounds really, really strange, actually.
Yeah, it is for many people, and I actually find it quite interesting that most people still today, and this is 25 years later, that are still not quite versed with what this is. And yet, what has happened today, we're seeing many more different types of, say, illnesses, diseases, labeled, and I would actually say classified or mislabeled. Brain allergies or cerebral allergies is basically a response, a negative response. It's an aversive response to some kind of contaminant. It can be a pollutant. It can be to, say, new furniture. It can be to off-gassing of formaldehyde in the environment. It can be anything of that sort that literally disturbs the neurotransmitters in the brain and therefore create an imbalance. And so, therefore, we can have any type of symptoms such as depression, manic depressive disorders, catatonia, can be any type of mental health issue. And as you can see, can be mislabeled, and also behavioral, and also even weakness or vitality issues. So the scope is wide. I mean, the symptoms are many. And that's what I found really quite a revelation, was the fact that someone could be literally experiencing something to adverse reaction to something in the environment and have these types of reactions. And, of course, it's never identified that they would be having a reaction.
Absolutely. And how do you detect this? I mean, if we talk about brain allergies, it seems, at least on the surface, that would be very difficult to classify, yeah, or even detect that. How do you go about that?
Well, oftentimes how I would, say, for example, work with an individual, if they were to come in and say, well, I'm feeling depressed, I have lack of energy, I have maybe some stomach problems, I have whatever, my first orientation is to ask them very simply, tell me about your lifestyle. Tell me what you eat. Tell me what you're exposed to. Tell me what you're what you are surrounded with in your environment. And that already will give me an indication as to what's going on for them. And, of course, the psychological component. If they're under, under tremendous stress from psychological or emotional, of course, I investigate that as well. But let's just keep it simple and look at something, and this certainly happened in my practice, where I had a number of different clients at the time. This is going back to about 1995. Before electromagnetic pollution even became a household word, many of my clients at that time were working with a lot of computers. They were working with an open concept office, being exposed to multiple computers at the same time,
yeah,
and, of course, the fluorescent lights, et cetera. And they would be coming in with many of these different complaints. And so that's where I began to ask those very simple questions. And we were then able, was able to identify and say, well, when you leave the office and you then go home, you're feeling better. So there is something then in your work environment. And that was a way to identify and literally just detect, just being really a detective to ascertain what it is. In other situations, it could be a food-related substance. I can think of a child who was having many difficulties in school, couldn't attend, it was hyperactive, difficulty with concentration, focus, etc. Upon questioning, it was ascertained that this child just loved this chocolate and sugar. And very simply, just removing the chocolate and sugar from his diet was remarkable. What we saw was, mother couldn't believe it, was a totally different child.
Yeah. So basically what you're describing here, Sabina, is basically you have a holistic approach and you need to investigate all the different aspects in order to come to the right conclusion about what is wrong, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what's missing.
My point as well, because that's kind of a little bit frowned upon in the regular medical field, as it were, that it's very compartmentalized there. And I think that that's a good approach to look at all the different factors, and you take in psychology, but also nutrition and things like that. But you mentioned, for instance, then nutrition and behavior. That's a very interesting connection as well, because we can see so much of, there's different classifications of these kind of what I call new diseases, ADHD or ADD or even ODD and things like that. And that's being approached from a point of view that we need to balance this with chemicals and so forth. What's your take on all of that, Sabina?
Oh, you asked such an important question for me. That is certainly really touches my heart, because that was an area that I did spend a lot of my research in and investigation. And really what is, as you said, we have all of these various names to and labels to this so-called disease state. And what was really a misnomer with all of this is that there is no such thing as ADD and ADHD. And that is actually a psychiatric term that was concocted for what we were seeing with many of these children who could not cope in a school situation. What we really are seeing are children who either are deficient, they're basically starved children nutritionally. Their malabsorption of their nutrients is taking place because of metabolic or digestive problems. And, of course, the typical allergen. And this is where cerebral allergies come into play. And that is not even investigated. And then on top of that, we are seeing many more of these young people being exposed to very high levels of heavy metal toxicity.
Yes.
So that we have, you know, the lead in the environment, the mercury, the aluminum, and those kinds of contaminants. And then, of course, with the EMS, which is the electromagnetic frequencies, and how many of these people, students, actually young people, even young children, are sitting in front of computer, TVs, and what is that doing to them?
This is
ADD. You know, ADD. Many of these children are very sensitive children. They're hypersensitive children. It doesn't take much for them. Just a spoonful of a substance that they are very sensitive to can literally send them off. In my research, I actually had the opportunity to access some videos that were taken at that time in a clinic, whereby these children were actually videotaped before and after to foods, and these would be regular type of food substances. Let's, for example, take milk. Milk is very typical of a food that most families are told that they need to be feeding their children.
Mm.
Do you realize that that is the number one food allergen?
So many people are developing lactose intolerance these days, right?
Exactly, exactly. And there is direct link between not only the lactose intolerance, but even the milk protein, that these children literally are completely different people in a matter of minutes. And particularly even in mental health conditions, we're seeing that. This was in the research, actually. This was shown over and over and over again in even mental hospitals where they did experiments with small groups and were able to actually identify certain types of food substances, take it out of their diet, and these people were back to somewhat normalcy, put it back into their diet, and they were completely off in terms of their schizophrenia or their mental aberrations. And their hallucinations, even.
That's just incredible. I've heard that pasteurization actually is one part of the problem, and some people are proponent of raw milk and things like that. Have you looked into that as well, Sabina?
Absolutely, and there's a lot of truth to that because of what the pasteurization does to the milk protein, and it makes it such that the body literally considers it a foreign substance and cannot metabolize it as such, and that's what really creates this allergen. Because it is basically a digestive inability for these malabsorbed protein molecules that now enter the bloodstream and then create the problems in, of course, the brain and throughout the entire system and nervous system. It literally can affect the person wherever their weakness is. And so this is what we are seeing, and particularly with milk. This is a common concern because, yes, you've just identified it. That's one of the major concerns. Is the pasteurization and the homogenization of milk.
Mm. Would this lead to, because before you mentioned the metabolic problems, basically, is this connected with that, or is there other causes that would create these problems?
The metabolic problem is certainly one of the major ones, and the inability to digest. And most children also do not actually have the enzymes to digest these types of substances as well. And secondarily, the milk is really, when it has been pasteurized and homogenized, is really a foreign substance to really anyone. And when given to a child who does not even have the enzymes to begin with, and particularly certain cultures that even lack the enzymes even further, then we're, for example, the Oriental culture, then we're even looking at more of a problem. They just do not have the ability to digest these substances. And so what we are looking at is issue or problem or challenge in that the food itself is one that is very difficult to digest, even if you have the enzyme. And then second to that is not having the enzymes to begin with.
That is That is very interesting. And, you know, one thing that I want to get into here, obviously, as we progress, is electromagnetism, and obviously talk a little bit about your book, Electromagnetic Pollution. I just can read a caption here from the book, and we can go more into detail on that after that. Basically, electromagnetic pollution was not a problem a century ago. It has become an occupational hazard of our high-tech 20th century and will probably continue to get worse as technology becomes more and more sophisticated into the 21st century. As our society moves more and more towards wireless forms of communication, the electromagnetic spectrum of broadcast waves is getting more and more crowded with new sources of electromagnetic impulses. We are all walking around being bombarded by a vast array of electromagnetic fields emitted from anything operating on an electrical current. It's a silent and invisible pollutant. And I can only say, just to kind of emphasize that a little bit, in the last couple of days in the apartment that I live in, I've heard through my speakers, you know, this the cell phone sound almost incessantly now. It's there every single day. You hear this this very disturbing almost noise coming through the speakers because of the fact that the wires behind of the speakers are being used by the cell phone as a extended antenna. And it just doesn't feel good to know that you're in that kind of environment, being bathed in it all the time. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that, cell phone radiation, Wi-Fi, and all these things.
Absolutely, absolutely. And just as you mentioned with what you have read, that yes, we are totally immersed, and we are becoming more so. It actually is really, it was at one time we were concerned with the chemical soup and chemical pollution. Actually, the electromagnetic soup or electromagnetic pollution in smog is even more of a problem, much more deleterious, because A, we can't see it, we can't touch it, it's ubiquitous to us, and it is so prevalent in our environment. And it definitely has increased. In the years that I first investigated this, back, as I mentioned, 1995 to 2000 was the area, and this is like, well, it's 10 years, 15 years later, it has increased that much more.
Yeah.
And so we are now seeing, as you just said, as you just indicated in your apartment, in your condo, people are being exposed to them even if they don't want to be. Within a 200-foot radius, if someone in your neighbor, as a neighbor, even in a home, and your neighbor, a neighbor has these types of technologies such as wireless in their home, the neighboring house, and particularly in an apartment building, there is absolutely no escape from it. Everyone is being bombarded from those microwaves, from the radiation exposure. There is absolutely no way to really escape it. And this is becoming a it already is a major, major problem.
So do you know if there's any studies being done in terms of, I mean, we get all these safe recommended levels all the time, but I've seen, for instance, people here in Gothenburg, the town I'm in Sweden, that they the people walking around with the detectors of radiation, basically, they have this a DV cam outside with them, and then they're aiming this apparatus instrument towards different, masts, you know, cell phone towers and things like this around in the city area. And they've measured, even in one very congested area, 10 times over the recommended level of cell phone radiation. Have there been any studies made on this in terms of what it actually does to the human body and so forth, and the psyche as well?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, it does, and there have been so many studies. What we are faced with here is a political problem, in that many of these studies, and you probably are aware of this, that many of these studies never surface to where they need to go. One of the studies that I would like to mention, and it's a little bit, and I'll come back to the point that you're mentioning here with these towers that we're talking about and that you've referred to, that Dr. George Carlo, back in the 1999, was commissioned by actually one of the cell phone companies to investigate the safety of cell phones. And he was actually hired. That was his job, as an epidemiologist. He was also a lawyer. and of course he was a researcher. So he was extremely interested to, of course, prove in fact and make a point that cell phones, because there was a lot that was starting to come out at that time, to actually show that, you know, cell phones were safe. Well, as you can well see as to what has taken place currently, he actually proved the opposite, that they were extremely dangerous. And when he first published this and had brought forth his research back to the company that he was working for, their first immediate response was, this will not be published, and if you were to publish or even indicate any of these dangers, you will no longer have a job with us.
Mm.
Well, as a conscientious scientist, he did go public, and of course, as he didn't have his job. I mean, he lost his job.
Yeah.
But as a result, of course, he's written a number of different books and has been, of course, quite available for much of his research, and that is now currently, and this is 10 years later, much more not only available, but has now been even much more identified to the dangers. And what basically Dr. Carlo had discovered back in 1999, in those years, was in fact that the cell phone industry had been increasing, of course, with the numbers of cell phones that are being used, which means that the towers are much more amplified, because there's much more use, means that the towers need to be amplifying much more in higher frequencies. And of course, that means that there's much more in the way of exposures. But what he discovered back then was that the microwaves were actually splitting the DNA.
Ooh, really?
They're actually, yeah, yes. He actually found that the telomeres in the DNA were actually being destroyed. They're being bombarded and destroyed. And he also found that people who were wearing any type of pacemaker, any type of device of that sort, that the cell phones would intercede, would interrupt, and actually could turn it off, and many of these people were literally dying. I mean, they would have heart attacks instantly. So this was, of course, a great concern, and as you can see, it's an alert. You know, the red sign goes up, stop. And with the DNA and the splitting of the DNA, what we're looking at and what has been identified in the research is that these are the first indicators, of course, of cancer. This is an indicator of cancer.
Mm.
And actually what we are seeing today is a phenomenal increase. Just to give you some statistics, I think what you will find interesting, and also very bizarre types of cancers that were never, ever an issue before, such as acoustic neuroma, which is an ear type of cancer. That has increased by 60%.
Hmm.
With the use of cell phones.
Right.
Now, another type of, yes, and another type of cancer that has increased, again, an unusual type of cancer is uveal melanoma, which is a cancer of the eye. And that has increased by 320%.
Hmm.
Is
this worldwide, or is it restricted to a
country? This is worldwide.
Worldwide.
No, wow. This is worldwide.
Ish.
And we're talking also now of brain tumors.
Yeah.
Okay, which have also increased. And it's the statistics now are between 60 to 90%. But it's just and again, the amount of brain tumors and along with that I will add is even leukemia, particularly for those that work around these hydro towers.
Hmm.
Major increase with that as well. And yet, there will be a denial, again, this gets into this whole political situation, of the denial of that existing, that, there are other reasons for that. And I think that what we really need to be aware of is that we are living in a very detrimental, highly charged environment.
I want to ask you if you maybe can just break down some of the terminology for us as well. EMF and overall electromagnetism. Just for those who are not aware of this at all, tell us about those two terms.
Okay, well, every substance, electromagnetism, everything comes down to is an electromagnetic field. We are basically, our bodies are an electrical system. the way that the nervous system conducts information, for example, is through an electrical synapse, and that's a term that is used for the way that it's not just a chemical, which most people think of nutrients, and all we need are vitamins, and that's going to carry that nutrient to feed the brain, and therefore that's how our bodies work. We also have this electrical system, which is now this nervous system that carries these pulses of information and transmits that, just like what we see in a wiring system in a house, for example.
Mm.
Now, I'm just simplifying it so that we can appreciate how our bodies work. And when we look at that electrical magnetic system, we also have a magnetic system. Anytime there's an electrical charge, anytime there is an electrical transmission, there is a magnetic field that is created. And that is why it's referred to as electromagnetic. When we break it down to the visible light spectrum and we look at why is it then dangerous and why is electrical magnetic systems, what is safe and what is basically unsafe. And that literally gets into the spectrum in which our bodies are in a harmonious or coherent pattern. And then what we're looking at is that spectrum that is beyond and is unsafe and is also incoherent. So just to give it kind of a little bit of a different term here, the visible spectrum is basically what we see around us, and it's what we are comfortable with. And so we call that our visible spectrum. When we are talking about ultra-high frequencies or the higher spectrum, most people have heard of X-rays, radiation, and know that gamma rays, they know that those are dangerous and cause a major disruption. And basically what those rays do is they break or split atoms apart. And so that's why they're extremely toxic. When we're talking about these lower spectrum of this electromagnetic field or frequencies, as it's referred to, we're talking about a lower spectrum that is out of our visible spectrum. But in that spectrum, we're dealing with a very low frequency that is also disharmonious with our own biological system.
Mm.
And so we're looking at these microwaves, radio frequencies, TV, and they all are in this lower spectrum. So I hope that that has given it some clarification.
Absolutely. And basically to emphasize again on these various frequencies that we have then in our environment, technology, human-created in most cases, basically interferes with the signals of our own body, our internal signals that basically keeps the body functioning, right?
Correct. That's correct. And that's the reason why this is important to understand with our own Hertz frequency, which is this ballpark figure of, and this has been measured, between what we vibrate to, between basically a 62 to the 78, say, megahertz frequency, which is what we need as a balance. Well, when we're dealing with, now the terms have been modified, meaning in the electromagnetic frequency labeling or words that have been used, they have moved from the milligauss to what is considered dangerous to the microtesla. That's a way of measuring what is safe and unsafe. And I'm just going to use this as an example that what we are seeing in our environment, for example, in the microtesla way of testing what is considered safe, anything higher than 0.2 is considered to be unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we look at just simple household gadgets, let's just take a look at within our own home, even without the use of a cell phone. Most of our household gadgets today utilize such an array of electromagnetic gadgets, in the vacuum cleaners, electric drills, the food mixers, the dishwashers, the clothes washer, all of that. Well, each of them emit a frequency or an electromagnetic field, and in that field, those fields now that have been measured are way beyond what is considered to be safe for our field. To give you an example, vacuum cleaners have been measured between anywhere from 2 to 20 microteslas.
Hmm.
And remember, I just said that 0.2 microteslas is considered safe.
Yeah, that's way over.
It's way over. Okay, electrical drills, okay, 2 to 20. Food mixers, 0.6 to 10 microteslas.
Hmm.
So when we begin to look at the amount that we're using in our everyday life and how much we're being exposed to, and then we add to it something like a cell phone, which is even much more, wow, I'm amazed that we're walking around as well as we are.
I see your point. I mean, I've heard that cell phones are on about 2.45 gigahertz, and I've heard that that's actually the same frequency as the microwave that many people unfortunately heat their food with. Do you know if that's true or not?
Oh, that is so true. That is so true. Such a high amount, and there have been some experiments that have been done with taking cell phones, and there was at one point having it beside an egg, keeping the cell phone on. And I don't know if you've heard of that, but
Sorry to catch up. I did actually see that, but afterwards it came out some news story that it actually was fake and all this, and I haven't been able to unravel that yet, and I haven't seen it.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. And I was just going to make a comment on that,
yeah,
that it never was truly unraveled. But I think that the point about that is basically displaying to us that there is some validity to the fact that there is a lot of radiation. And it does literally, from what we have seen with the brain tumors and with many of these different types of cancers that I was talking about, it literally has been shown that it's cooking from the inside out. And that, I think that that's the point. That what we are seeing is that the inside of the brain, and particularly when we talk about cell phones, within 2 minutes, and basically I will say this in terms of what the research is showing today, there is no controversy on this particular fact that the cell phone radiation goes through the blood-brain barrier, and it only takes 2 minutes. Blood-brain barrier.
How can it go through the – how does that transfer? Does it just go – I don't understand it. Explain that for us.
It's just basically this membrane, and I'll just back up a little bit with the membrane of the blood-brain barrier. Is a membrane, and it's a protective membrane that keeps the blood that circulates in our system from carrying damaging proteins and
heavy metals. Yes, yes.
Correct, into the brain.
Yeah.
Now this membrane, okay, is easily affected by these electromagnetic, these low frequencies, these microwaves. Now, microwave radiation, many people know this. They use microwaves. What do they use microwaves to? We call them microwave ovens. What do they do?
Cook the food.
Cook the food. How does it cook the food?
It heats up the molecules or make them basically go faster or what do you call it?
Correct.
You know, yeah.
It agitates the molecule at such a fast rate that it creates heat.
Yes.
Okay, now these microwaves, just imagine, these microwaves, it's like sticking literally one's head into a microwave oven on a lower dose, and that this is happening continually. What is happening to the molecules in the brain?
I've no idea. They fry it, probably. They heat up then.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what's happening. And then
yeah,
they call it slow cooking.
Hmm.
I mean, many of the researchers actually refer to it as, you know, you're just literally cooking your brain.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really great way to look at it, because we certainly are doing it with food. We have no question about what's happening to food because we see that it's cooked. Well, what's happening to the brain is something very similar. It's just happening in a slower amount because, of course, we're not, you know, in terms of the exposure with the cell phone itself. So here it is, within 2 minutes, it does not take that much. For now, what's also interesting in the research, and I think I really would like to point this out, that the blood-brain barrier opens up and allows then these protein molecules and whatever needs, these foreign substances, to enter. And it basically will stay open for 5 hours.
Oh, really? That long?
That long.
Oof.
And that these proteins And now in terms of clumping, they actually come in and they clump together, which is the theory behind what is happening with these tumors.
Hmm.
So thinking about young children, for example, who are being exposed to cell phones. I mean, they're using these cell phones. And what has been found in the literature with the research, in fact, has shown that many of these young people are, in fact, being highly exposed due to their brains not having the capabilities as adults do, the structure of the brain and the skull, of course, being much more solid, much more developed, that young people do not have, and so they don't have protection. And so we are, in fact, seeing many of these young children being exposed to these high amounts. And not only is it that tumors are one of the, side effects, we're also seeing that many of these, the other influences that take place, particularly for the brain, is the influences, the neurotransmitters, the dopamine, the serotonin levels are being affected. This has a lot to do with depression, mental health, and you mentioned earlier about ADD and ADHD.
And same thing here, then, yeah.
We've gone around in a circle, haven't we?
Yes, exactly, absolutely. So, I mean, okay, that's obviously a huge problem. What about people who use cell phones now and then? Is there any safe use of cell phones at all, or would you simply recommend not to do it at all?
Well, you know, this is a very interesting dilemma because the research has certainly been pointing out to, okay, if you're going to be, in terms of safe use, then use some kind of cell phone protector to aid with this. Now, there's a couple of logistical issues that have come forth, and I've been really looking at this from another point of view, and that is that, yes, I think that and certainly I recommend it, and I have been not just identifying this, but certainly recommending this on my site, what cell phone protectors one can get. And definitely, definitely need it. But it still doesn't cover the issue that the radiations that, and the microwave radiation that's being certainly exuded into the environment is being taken care of. Meaning that more people now, knowing that they can, okay, get a cell phone protector, can go out and get a cell phone because it can get the protection.
Mm-hmm.
But there is, I think, there is another question to ask with this. Are we being as conscientious about this as we need to be? Does this not, rule out then the fact that we take care of Mother Earth and the fact that, well, we can use it because we can protect ourselves, but are we really doing a service to mm-hmm. protecting Mother Earth? And I think this really opens up to another huge question. We need to do something here on a much broader scale, and that is something for the environment. We need to do something to protect what the towers are emitting, because that's really where the problems are lying. It's not just with the cell phone itself.
Well, I think that's a very good point. I'm glad you brought that up, because I actually read a new study in the local paper here the other day, which claimed that, cell phone is not connected with the brain. Cell phone use is not connected with brain tumors. It was like, oh well, okay, we'll see about this. I read the entire article. Of course, the entire article ended with the statement that they've actually not those who had brain tumors and they mentioned the increase just as you did here as well. But they mentioned that they basically haven't studied the behavior, of the people who actually had the brain tumors, meaning they could actually be high users of cell phones, but they haven't even investigated that. But second of all, they said that mm-hmm. the use of cell phones did not really correspond to the increase in brain tumors, because the increase in brain tumors happened before. But then my thought was, but wait a minute, the towers actually went up before, because they knew before they started pushing the cell phones and selling those to everybody that they need to have the infrastructure in place to be able to handle all the calls that are going to be made. So if you look at cell phone towers, you have a direct correlation there instead, right?
Absolutely. That's exactly my point. And what's interesting, and this goes back to Dr. Wertheimer's study. Now, this was done back in about the 60s, 70s. So we're talking at quite a number of years ago. And she was a researcher at that time in the University of Colorado, and she was actually checking magnetic fields. It had nothing to do with necessarily cell phones. She was really checking out was these hydro towers and electromagnetic fields that were being emitted. And what she found was that these fields at that time at 3 milligauss were significantly related to a 2 to 3-fold increase in childhood cancers, especially leukemia and brain tumors. Now, what's interesting, as a researcher and an epidemiologist at that time, she was ridiculed and criticized highly for, oh, this couldn't be. And we're still grappling with that same question. And I just find it very interesting.
Yeah.
When we can see over and over and over again that the research is there. There was a wonderful study that was done in Sweden, a study of 500,000 people, which I do quote in my book, of over 20, and was actually done over a 25-year period. And it found a 4-fold increase in the risk of leukemia among children who live near power lines. And for adults, it doubled their risk.
Hmm.
Matter of fact, the Swedish government took it seriously that they listed electromagnetic pollution along with tobacco as a class 2 carcinogen.
There you go. Sheesh.
Exactly.
Do you know if this was a study that was replicated in Popular Science?
I don't think it was replicated. Again, what we're seeing, and I know through the research I was delving into at the time, there were a number of researchers and scientists at university level who, through, again, governmental influence, were either told that they could not release their information or their research literally was just shelved. It was just put on the back shelf. And so what I'm saying here is that not necessarily the research is there, but many of these either government level countries did not want to have these studies available to the general public because of what that would, of course, lead to. And we really have another issue with that in terms of how much is literally being kept back from general knowledge.
Exactly.
Because the research is there. If we really delve for it, it is there. I mean, and these are top scientists who have been delving into this issue for quite a number of years, and it's there.
Why do you think it's being held back? What do you think the reason is for that?
Well, as I mentioned with Dr. George Carlo, and in particularly his research at the time, it would have influenced, of course, the sales of cell phones, and they did not want that because, as you know, cell phones have become an extremely popular item.
Yes.
I know that in certain countries, cell phones is the main way of communication, more so than even landlines. And in so doing, it means that more cell towers go up, these transmission lines. There are more of these that now are being erected. And the more that people are demanding to use their cell phones, more of these towers go up.
And that's becoming
more of a problem.
Absolutely, and again, you have these campaigns where they basically they basically give you the cell phone. Okay, I understand that from a money point of view, they want to have you hooked by the minute costs, of course. But basically, they cost less than a dollar or even a crown for us up here. And they're paid for by the cell phone company, so they want everybody to use them. And there's even a campaign up here now. Don't know if it goes on in other countries, but. Basically, they're mentioning how uncool the regular landlines are, and they want everybody to move over to the wireless and the cell phones now. Even though, as you mentioned, studies here in Sweden have been done, which recognize how dangerous it is.
Exactly. Well, it's interesting you mention this again. I'm going to point out when I was mentioning about the scientists, and this reminded me that the scientists in Spain and Sweden was one of the other countries. Germany and England were forbidden to speak on the dangers of EMFs and or their research would no longer be funded.
Jeez. Ish, there you go. Well, that's all the evidence we need, really, right there. Then we know what the score is. That's just incredible.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
No. And just along with that, again, with Dr. George Carlo's work, he certainly was a forerunner in this, where he was able to continually fund himself after he had divulged the information that he did receive from the cell phone company at that time, and then he was able to continue on with it. And so that's how much more of this information was able to be available to the general public. And as a result of that, there were more and more scientists who were able to come through more on their own than being governmentally supported. Mm. As I pointed out, many of these countries would just not allow that information to be released.
I want to ask you a bit about cell phone towers, what we potentially can do to protect ourselves from that. But there's another thing here first. Hands-free has been promoted in one way to help us, protect us and so forth. And some people have claimed you can put what's known as a ferrite choke on the end of the cord of the hands-free in order to actually prevent this radiation. Would you recommend that? Is that a good idea, do you think?
Well, there's been controversy about this. It's better in that it is away from the ear, it's away from the head, brain, etc. But what they are finding, and some more recent research and speculation about this, that what is now being emitted within the area, for example, within a car, where it's now hand-free, that there is more emissions, actually, and more radiation exposure within the vehicle or within the room or wherever that is being used, wherever that phone is being used. Mm. So there is actually a lot of concern presently about whether or not that is even in fact safer or whether or not it is actually contributing to more exposure.
Oh, really? Oops.
So it really is, again, another interesting question.
Yeah. How about cell phone towers then? Is there anything, again, for those people who are in a city environment and might not have the luxury in this case to be out in the countryside and so forth, and they have cell phone towers around them pretty much 24/7. Is there anything to do at all to protect yourself from this?
There are. There are some protector devices that now have been established that work on a very interesting proprietary type of understanding with energies. And they are devices that can be placed within the home or on a computer, within the space, even within the vehicle, a car vehicle, whatever. And it will help to offset and neutralize those types of radiation exposures. So there are those now available. And again, you did mention my website. I do have a couple of other websites, but certainly going into that website and just emailing myself or going to my link website can give that information as to getting these particular devices that can be used within the home environment.
Maybe you want to mention... Yes, I understand. And maybe you want to mention a little bit more about that then, because I'm definitely interested in that. I've heard, for instance, about organite. There's a claim that there's different stones or even crystals that can help to actually block this out. Is this what you're talking about, or is this totally different?
These are actually devices that have been made. They're like, some of them look like little cards that can be placed and will offset, and they're really quite amazing in terms of, I've been using them for years with my clients. They work extremely well. People feel the change within their environment, and they're basically space or safe space devices is how we refer to them,
mm-hmm.
and so that they do protect the space, and it can be anywhere within your office or home or a vehicle. But it's a similar idea to, for example, using a gemstone or a crystal like you were mentioning.
Yeah.
Because it's a similar idea to that.
And is this, has there been studies made on this as well? Has it been scientifically studied?
There have been. And actually, there have been some wonderful studies that have been done in the moment. I have also been involved with a particular study of geometric patterns that have been utilized, and this is part of the technology that is being used. And it's a field now that has been growing, and more information on it. I have been a student of this, and have been utilizing this as well. And in particularly, these geometric patterns are ways that are being used. And I will mention that Dr. Karim in Egypt is one of the key people that's brought this forth in helping to offset many of these dangers from these cell towers and from these EMF exposures. And it's by the simple use, and it seems really very simple, it's to understand how these geometric patterns actually work. And what's most important is they do, and they've been proven to work. And matter of fact, his work was utilized. He actually was called into doing some governmental work, and actually did make a major shift in the whole town experience of the cell tower that was erected, and particularly in this town. So I do share that piece with you because there are very simple ways that literally can neutralize these types of effects.
Hmm. So is it like a geometrical shape in a form of a 3D object, or is it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It will be. Yeah. Yes. And they're just small geometric shaped patterns that literally can be placed on a computer or on a desk or within the environment, and different ones that are used for different purposes that will offset.
And they're supposed to cancel out then the radiation, basically.
Correct.
Does that mean correct. That, for instance, a cell phone won't work within the field of this?
No, it absolutely works. But what it does is it helps to neutralize the detrimental aspects of what is being emitted. And so that, in which, of course, is what we want to have happen. And so we do have that available to us at this point, and what truly, I certainly have seen with the development of this and with the other technology, they're very similar. They're actually very similar in what has gone into them, is the fact that we have been needing this type of technology for what we have now been bombarded with.
Mm. The same thing, does that imply to, you mentioned TV screens and you mentioned computers before as well. Is that equally dangerous, but it's just that it's on another frequency, meaning that it will have another effect on the human body?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, research that was done quite a number of years ago, and again, this was kind of hush-hush type of research that was done just with the monitors in the computer system, where pregnant women, and you may have heard of this, where they had an uncanny amount of miscarriages, and that's what led them to investigate. And they did find that there was a direct link to those that were sitting in front, those who were pregnant and having a high miscarriage due to the exposures from computers.
Hmm. Oof, not good at all. So do you know, do you have a recommended level of usage when it comes to computer? I mean, and again, many people are... they're working in front of computers, me included, but many others, obviously, in these days. And you know, do you recommend a certain hours at least per day when you are not supposed to be in front of a computer?
Well, yes. You are absolutely correct. It is recommended to have so many hours. It is not recommended to be doing more at night, where our radiation exposure in our biological system certainly is much more. More vulnerable,
to
put it that way. Yes. It's because the way that the pineal gland works in receiving light and darkness and the whole issue of the melatonin production, it is recommended that, of course, at nighttime we do shut off and so that we can restore that. Unfortunately, most of us tend to work, in front of a computer at night.
Yeah.
And so what is that doing to that part of our anatomy and the pineal gland, of course, sitting right there in the midbrain. And of course, the other aspect here of having some form of a protective device that would be also on the computer or around the computer that would offset those types of radiation exposures.
Do you know anything about organite and if that works?
That would be helpful. There have been a number of ones that have been identified. That is one. I know I do quote some in my book where there's some simple techniques, and even, believe it or not, there was even some ways to offset it with very high therapeutic grade essential oils in combination, because they have a frequency, in combination with some very simple techniques of using peat moss, for example, which I do have in my book, that can sit on top of a computer or near a computer, and that will help to absorb the radiation, the exposure that what's being given off. So that these are just some very simple. They help, and the more that we can do to help ourselves, the better it is.
Sabina, I'd love to continue talking more with you. I have so many more questions. I want to ask you about vaccines and also the swine flu and many other things. Do you have the time for us to continue another segment?
Okay, and that would be another... Sure, I think I can probably do that. I'm just looking at the time. I think I can.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, excellent. Let's round things up here as soon as possible then. But basically, like this, I think our listeners would be very interested in reading more about the devices that you mentioned. They want to, get some more information about it, the cards, and also these geometric shapes that you mentioned. Please mention your websites and where people need to go in order to check out more about this, and also mention your book, of course, that we've been talking about here today.
Correct. The website that you mentioned earlier is www.devitawellness.com. Which is one of my home sites, that does link to some of these devices that I've been talking about, and which will give also a lot more information so that the viewer can, of course, read about what specifically they may need for their home, their environment, their computer system. So there is information on that, on those devices. And then, of course, my book can be also going to the wellness store. That can be purchased directly from that site as well. And my other site, which is the Energy, again, www.energywellnessstudies.com website. Under Wellness Store, there is also some links there.
Okay, very good. There we go. A few websites for you guys out there. We will have these linked up on redaskreations.com as well for easy access. But devitawellness.com and energywellnessstudies.com as well. And again, the book is called Electromagnetic Pollution, the Silent Invisible Pollutant. Stay with us then, Sabina, and we'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more for our members. That's our first hour with Sabina DeVita. Join us in our second hour for much more as we discuss the swine flu, vaccinations, thimerosal, mercury, amalgam, detoxing, nutrition, and essential oils. We talk about a special oil called Thieves Oil. Very interesting name, and it actually has a very interesting story behind the name as well, going back all the way to the bubonic plague and the spice merchants that managed to survive through that particular time. Upcoming on Red Eyes Radio, we have part 3 of our miniseries with Michael Tesserion. Investigative mythologist William Henry will join us. We are also going to talk to the Heart Math Institute. John Lash will join us again, and many more lined up. But don't miss hour 2 with Sabina DeVita coming up after this break.